is Dr. Ed Knight. I am Vice President for Recovery, Rehabilitation, and Mutual Support at Value Options, which is a large behavioral health managed care company. I'm also a consumer of mental health services, a researcher, a trainer, and quite an activist. The previous, I'm going to relate this to the previous presentation. The previous presentation showed a low use of service. This will begin to explore and I think shed some light on why there is a low use of service. And it's interesting to me. This is the first of three connected studies. There was a study done in New York, and we did it because the state had undertaken a suicide prevention initiative and consumer survivor voices were not included in that initiative. So we took it upon ourselves to do some research on the problem and joined with Nathan Klein Institute to help do that. Suicide is a devastating public health problem, as everybody knows. Research indicates that people with prior attempts at are at greater risk. Followed by people with depression and other major mental illnesses and substance abuse conditions. The study objective was, as I've said, because there was so little direct input into any of the suicide prevention activities from people with severe mental illnesses and a history of suicidal ideation or suicide attempts, this study sought to identify how populations in New York who are consumers of public mental health services diagnosed with severe and persistent mental illnesses cope with suicidal ideations. This was then followed up by a study that's almost done in Colorado, as you'll see from the results of the New York study. We wanted to know why consumers of mental health services did not use mental health services to cope with suicidal ideation in very high numbers, and I'll get into that when I get into the next steps. The methods were, we had 14 regional consumer-run recovery dialogues with an N of 205 in New York State. Participants had a history of prior suicidal thoughts or attempts. Participants were able to identify each participant up to five strategies they used to deal with suicidal ideation. The strategies were classified using grounded theory with by consumers and researchers. The characteristics, 42% men, 58% women. The largest age group was between 41 and 50, although there's representation from most age groups except those under 18 because we were studying people in the public mental health adult system. There's also a good spread ethnically and we in New York are blessed with having a large involvement in the consumer movement by the Native American, American Indian population. And so we find 10% of the sample is Native American, 16% African American, and 10% Hispanic. Here are the ways in which people cope. Classified using grounded theory. And you'll see there's quite a variety, and the mental health system is not at the top. Actually, a little less than 12%, this is rounded off, a little less than 12% use the mental health system. This is how people actually get through suicidal ideation. The leading practice is spirituality, and this does not mean talking to a pastor. This means internal spiritual strength of some kind. Talking to someone was usually family or friends. That was very important, and positive thinking also was. There are some different, you'll find using peer supports, doing something pleasurable, protecting myself from the means, doing grounding activities such as gardening. Considering the consequences to myself, considering the consequences of people close to me was more important for women, by the way. Doing tasks to keep busy, maintaining sobriety, finding a safe place, helping others, and seeking emotional outlets. Of when people named their chief coping strategy, we took the first response they made as more important. And of those first responses, without differentiating between men and women or age, we find that spirituality and religious practices are the highest. Talking to someone, next highest. Positive thinking, next highest. Using the mental health system and considering consequences to others, and use of peer supports. The results, although a majority report therapeutic supports available, fewer than 12% indicate they use mental health services as the first line of strategy, which fits with the previous findings, in my estimation, of Dr. Wu. And instead, respondents rely more frequently on family, friends, and faith as a source of hope and support. There's differences between men and women. You'll see men use spirituality and positive thinking far more than women, then talking with someone, then using the mental health system. Men use the mental health system about a little less than 6% of the time. Women, you'll see the third use is the mental health system, but the fourth is considering consequences to those close to them, which is an interesting difference. The conclusions: consumers rely on therapeutic and peer and family supports, so education and support for dealing with individuals in despair and crisis should be targeted to social networks of high-risk populations. And I might add, provided that you don't convert those social networks into control systems, because then I think you'll find avoidance of the social networks. Consumers most frequently name, and I'll get into our findings briefly in Colorado to explain why I say that. Consumers most frequently name spirituality as their first coping line of strategy. I'm not going to say much about this, just let me say, in substance abuse, spirituality is viewed as a solution. In mental health, spirituality is viewed as a symptom. And so the strength by which people are making it through suicide, especially men, is stigmatized, stereotyped, and can get you locked up, actually, in certain situations if you talk about spirituality, since it's considered delusional. Consumers rank formal mental health crisis services fourth among their coping strategies. Suicide prevention efforts aimed at formal systems should evaluate whether they can effectively engage high-risk populations as they struggle to cope with suicide and despair. In my estimation, there would have to be not a transformation in name only for people to begin to use services at a higher rate. There would have to be a real transformation, and it would have to be a nonviolent, non-force transformation. Because now, when you face seeing a therapist, you also face being locked up. And being locked up is not pretty in this country, no matter how you cut it. So we did a follow-up study in Colorado, and it suggests that the consequentiality of naming or talking about suicide in the mental health system is too high. In terms of, we found out the naming problem anecdotally. When we did focus groups, consumers told us they were relieved to finally be able to use the term suicide in a public arena, because with therapists there were euphemisms were used, and they were pleased to be able to name the phenomenon. The main forms of consequentiality which emerged when consumers were asked, why don't you talk to your therapist about suicidality, were, number one, it would hurt the therapeutic alliance. I'd have to ask, what kind of therapeutic alliance is there if it would hurt the therapeutic alliance to talk about one's most serious problems? The second was overreaction by the therapist, such things as taking medications away, restrictions of all kinds. And then the third was, these were all about at the same, the end was the same for all of these about, there were about 51, 52, 53 people in each. The third was being locked up, or fear of going to the hospital. And so those were named as consequences and reasons for not using suicide. When asked, what could we do to have you talk to therapists, one of the overwhelming responses was the use of alternative services, peer services, meeting outside of the office, accepting calls outside of normal times, a number of alternative ways of dealing with the issue of suicide. So I find these very interesting findings. There's also going to be, currently an ongoing follow-up study in Pennsylvania. And in Pennsylvania, we are looking at suicide attempts from July to December 2006, active suicide attempts, and then we're doing a chart review to see if the issue of suicide came up 30 days prior to the attempt in therapy, and whether or not there was an assessment done or the client raised the issue. And that ought to be interesting. We expect to find that there was not, that the issue did not come up significantly.